Hi everyone, welcome to Desi Dreamers, a brand new podcast which will transport you into the aspirational mindscapes of British South Asian trailblazers and visionaries. I want to go past a singular definition of South Asians, where Tamils, Punjabis, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis and so many more are perceived as the same type of ethnic identity. By talking to inspiring British Asian trailblazers, I want to create a vivid tapestry of the South Asian experience, including generations of dreams deferred, obstacles overcome, and boundaries transcended through a spirit of determination. I also want to build a community of listeners, young British Asians like me, who want to learn from trailblazing role models from the diaspora, who have fascinating, inspiring stories. In this episode, I'll be talking to Rohan Rocket. Rohan is a multi-talented artist making waves in the music scene and beyond. As a DJ, actor, and creative director of the Mephil event series, Rohan's work spans various creative disciplines. He's an active member of the Daytimers Collective, which champions South Asian creative communities, and has performed at prestigious venues and festivals like Lost Village, We Out Here, and even Glastonbury. We'll be exploring Rohan's journey through music, acting, and community building, discussing the challenges of balancing multiple creative pursuits and delving into his vision for South Asian representation in the arts. So, let's welcome Rohan Rocket to Desi Dreamers. Hi Rohan, welcome to Desi Dreamers. How are you and what's been keeping you busy lately?
Hello, thank you for having me. Really good to be here in Northwest London. I'm not travelling for once. What's been keeping me busy?
Yeah.
I had a really good summer. Mm-hmm. We're recording this just after festivals, mm-hmm. Which was amazing. It was a real like pinch me summer. I'm like, wow, this is my life now, you know. Mm-hmm. I got to travel across the UK a lot, mm-hmm. Met a load of amazing people, played abroad as well. Mm-hmm. A really eye-opening and fulfilling summer, I guess.
That's exciting.
I'm now just recovering, you know.
Yeah.
Back in the routine of London.
Yeah, hibernation phase.
Yeah, but also London doesn't let you.
No. And I'm sure there's lots of exciting things upcoming that you need to start planning and things, which I'm sure we'll talk about in the episode. So, based on what you just mentioned about your exciting summer, I know that you have a really varied portfolio of work. You do so many different things. You're an actor, Lambda graduate, and you're a DJ, creative director, so there's lots to talk about. So to kick things off, could you take us through what you see as your key creative focuses and any sort of themes that connect your portfolio of work from acting to music, anything that sticks out as a common theme?
Yeah, I think thematically, I guess it's all just a form of release for me and self-expression. I guess all art is, so maybe it's a bad answer, but I think, yeah, having different art forms where I can express myself just, I don't know, I feel like I get something from each different discipline. Music is so joyful and you can really get lost. And there's a deep like storytelling aspect to it as well, which I really appreciate. I studied history at uni. Mm-hmm. And I studied a lot of ethnomusicology, so I come to my DJ sets from that sort of discipline. But that feeling of just locking in and losing yourself is ever present when I step on stage as well. You know, there's nothing else like it. You don't need to think about what you're going to cook for dinner. You don't need to think about your future. You don't think about your past, or you're just living in the present completely, mm-hmm. and you know where you're going, but the lived experience on stage of getting there is different every night because other people are going to give you different things when you're on stage with them. Mm-hmm. I guess the immediacy of experiencing stuff, and like same with a DJ set, if you're going back to back with someone, like you can't expect anything. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's like a deep way of saying I'm probably an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah. I was about to say something that, based on what you said, something that I thought of is in terms of theatre and also DJing, the live aspect of it, the live audience, compared to things that are recorded or things that are stories, whilst you, I'm sure you do a lot of kind of written work and other production work, the buzz that you get from a live experience and that immediate interaction with the crowd, I'm imagining is something that connects your acting experiences on stage and also your live performances and music.
Yeah, definitely. I guess it's less of a conversation with a in theatre than it is with the DJ set. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot from the dance, from people enjoying themselves. And it's, I feel like it's a conversation. But yeah, with theatre, it's more, I guess it depends on the style, the venue as well in London. Some theatres really lend themselves to letting the audience really be a part of their shows. Mm-hmm. But theatre's a lot more archaic. It's a lot more... like there are rules, they're like these very Eurocentric views that have sort of dominated theatre's landscape, which I feel like London is sort of rewriting that slowly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we can talk about that later.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the moment at which you knew you wanted to pursue acting and kind of get into theatre? Was there a certain pinpoint moment, someone you saw that really inspired you to pursue acting?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure it was a moment. I've always been, I'm really lucky that my family really encouraged me to pursue acting. Mm-hmm. I think just because I was a very, very shy child growing up. So I was always really, really involved throughout my school years. I was really lucky that my school had, a little theatre where we could... do that sort of stuff. Not every school does. Then went to uni and did a lot of student productions. Got involved with the National Youth Theatre before that. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was really fun. And I think I found a lot of my people, my tribe, through theatre. It's such an amazing way of creating a family really quickly, especially in new environments and surroundings. I really, really lent on that. So I think it was the community or the family aspect of stuff which really drew me in first. But I've always loved it. And it was only until I got a free audition to study at drama school, mm-hmm. at Lambda, thankfully for my friend Dan. I never would have thought of applying, to be honest. That sort of crossroads changed my life, I guess.
And in terms of the community aspect of theatre, in relation to your like South Asian identity, do you feel like there are any challenges or maybe barriers that you faced in settling into that industry or feeling at home in that industry?
Well, I think historically when I was growing up, I grew up in a very white area, a very, very white school, predominantly white school. I felt othered throughout my school years and growing up, teenage years. Never actually thought about diversity in theatre at all, really. I just thought this was not for people like me, and that is normal. And then obviously the more you learn and the history of theatre, it being like an Eastern thing, and coming to terms with that and learning more, meeting more people. I think me joining the industry as a 20 something person, I was immediately like, where's my tribe? Where are my people? This was post Daytimers as well. And us sort of finding each other and rewriting the rule book in our own way in this industry that was very white dominated. I think I was a lot less naive when I came to joining the acting industry, which I'm still a baby in, and I appreciate that too. I'm a very recent grad from drama school. I'm lucky to have worked. But I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, definitely did. And I think we're going to discuss a little bit more about your cultural and ethnic background later. But I just want to quickly turn to music. So as you mentioned, you had a very busy summer performing internationally, also in the UK, festivals like Lost Village and Glastonbury, and lots of residencies as well. So can you describe your journey as a DJ, how your sound has evolved, how your influences throughout your life have shaped your music?
Yeah, my DJing, I started off DJing on radio. As soon as I joined university in Nottingham, mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to do it. So I hounded the student radio people at the time. I was like, I want a show and I want it in my first week.
I feel
week.
Like every student radio needs hounding.
They do.
The way that in my university as well, I was interested in audio production. It took me months to get that ball rolling.
And honestly.
I was like, you should be encouraging this.
They don't care. They're having a good time. But I was so insistent, right? I was like, this is happening. Week one, I manifested it. And week one, I had a show. So, I started off just sharing music with people that I loved. And the shows sort of built up, like a decent following, you know. Mm-hmm. People would tune in regularly. For student radio as well, I didn't appreciate at the time that wasn't the norm. I thought, everyone listens to student radio. Mm-hmm. That sort of spiraled, and next thing you know, people were listening to the show and being like, do you want to come DJ here? I was like, yeah, all right. Never really done it before.
Yeah.
We're lucky to have decks in our studio, so I was practicing there. Mm-hmm. I was horrendous, like really, really terrible. Played some of my first shows, cleared rooms, all of that sort of rite of passage. But the love was there, and what I was playing then, I really don't think is very dissimilar from what I'm playing now. Mm-hmm. The roots of it, especially everything that I was studying at the time, being fascinated with black music and jazz music, and music from marginalized peoples and voices, you know. I guess, in terms of what I grew up listening to, my dad is really massively into classical music, actually. So there's a lot of classical music in our house, alongside like R&B stuff and. Like George Benson. My mum was a massive George Benson fan. Those sort of like jazzy world meets more chinstrokey stuff. I feel like you can still hear in my sets. That's sort of how I started DJing. But obviously you took it really, started doing it a lot more towards the end of my uni years. I was playing out regularly and really finding my feet with it and finding a sense of calm and purpose and confidence. Mm-hmm. And that sort of landed me perfectly for when Daytimers was emerging. And I was like, cool, I moved back to London now. I don't really know how to navigate that. And then it's the pandemic. I was like, this is not happening, is it? Everything, I'm a big believer in kismet, you know, everything happens for a
mm-hmm,
reason.
Absolutely. And so if we fast forward to right now, how do you approach creating a set? So could you run us through a little process of how you go from picking your music, putting it together, and the whole timeline of it all?
I guess it really depends on, the vibe or venue or time. Mm-hmm. I was DJing last night, Tuesday night for those listening, at Rough Trade East.
Rough Trade East.
Great, right?
Such a good venue.
I'd always been going to shows there.
Yeah.
It was for Tara, I was supporting Tara Lilly, her album launch party, which was great. And it felt amazing. Like, I remember being like way too young going to gigs there. So that was great. So obviously a Tuesday night set is very different. I've been collecting records for years and years and years. Inspired by my granddad, who's a really big record collector, actually. So in terms of approaching a set, I guess it's about reading a vibe, but also just trusting myself. I always feel like I try not to overthink my sets now. Mm-hmm. I also try not to plan them either, at all, really. Mm-hmm. I think I'll find I'm fortunate enough to get sent a lot of music now from producers that I really, really admire from around the world. So I'm always sort of like tapped into what's happening there. But also I love discovering new music, and I'm always trailing through Bandcamp or listening to mixes and YouTube rabbit holes. So I guess I come to it from like a really nerdy place. Mm-hmm. And what I'm into really differs week on week, you know, and what I'm feeling. But I guess it is all about reading a crowd and reading a vibe of like a party that will book me. I tried not to be very prescriptive and be like, I am playing between these BPMs tonight and that is all I'm going to do. Because you can, I've been booked for gigs where I've got like a headline set and the person before me is playing like at 160 at 11 PM. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what do you do? Anyway, so yeah. I try, yeah, I guess that's a long way of saying I try not to plan things, but I think it makes it organic, it makes it accessible as well, and people feel a part of it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And it links to what I want to talk about in terms of your culture and your ethnic identity influencing the work that you do now. So you briefly mentioned during your discussion of music that you've worked with daytimers. So for the benefit of the listeners, could you explain a little bit about Daytimers Collective and share some of the initiatives that you're working on at the moment?
We're a collective that was born from the ashes of the pandemic in 2021. We're a collective that spotlight and celebrate South Asian artistry in all its many forms. We are a team of volunteers, very dedicated, lovely, and very driven people. We've got that South Asian work ethic. And I guess the whole premise of the collective is, can be summarized by like, if you don't have a seat at the table, you make your own table, make your own house, you know? That's the whole ethos. And I think a lot of us didn't have the opportunities that are around now for people of color, in the creative industries, and we feel a really deep sense of purpose to make sure that those opportunities will be maintained for years, and we can grow on that to make sure that we're not just a diversity tick box anymore, and that people can rise up the ranks in their respective creative industries and create platforms that will last and sow the seeds for something greater, you know. But yeah, we're a record label. We run parties. We do radio. We do poetry nights, live music nights. There's a lot happening.
And can you tell us a little bit about how you see Daytimers' impact? Like, you talked about sowing the seeds to create sort of a larger community and such a wide range of work. But how do you want people to talk about Daytimers, and how do you want to see it sort of, you know, in the future and its impact more broadly?
I think just joyful. It is a safe space, mm-hmm. where people can really just celebrate themselves. Mm-hmm. The music's always amazing. Mm-hmm. We're really careful with our curation, and we're really trusting of like emerging talents and people we really respect. So we've got a wide roster of people that we book, mm-hmm. and platform. I think that's it. I think Daytimers is less of a sound, mm-hmm. which is a common misconception. I think people come to a Daytimers event expecting to hear South Asian influenced music, but it's not just that. It's a lot more than that. And I think platforms like Boiler Room and other platforms that sort of put us into the viral sort of limelight didn't really help with that mission, but I think we just exist to platform people's artistry first and foremost, mm-hmm. and they happen to be South Asian. We really don't want to prescribe anything. Mm-hmm. We never ask people to we don't expect anything from people's sets. We're like, cool, we've listened to a mix you've done, mm-hmm. And you're good enough and talented enough to be on a Daytimers lineup if you've got 5 followers or 5,000 followers or 50,000 followers. So that's the ethos, just togetherness, community, And not expecting anything from anyone that's coming either.
And something linking to what you said in terms of expectation of what South Asian music or South Asian performance would be like. South Asian identity obviously isn't a monolith. And I think that's often a misconception in the concept of South Asian creativity, that it will all kind of look or feel the same. Mm. So could you tell us a little bit more about your own cultural background, your own sort of ethnic identity, and how that has very specifically influenced the different things that you do now?
Yeah, so I'm half Bengali, mm-hmm. half Punjabi. So two different parts of South Asia, with very rich cultures and mm-hmm. peoples, and there's a lot of pride there. And I'm really, really, really grateful that I've got these two parts of my culture to sort of lean on. In terms of how that's influenced me or like my creativity, I'm not entirely sure. I think throughout my early years, I really tried to push that side of myself away or sort of package it. Mm-hmm. And I think the lived experience of a lot of people growing up in this country is to be like, yeah, like, ah, like I'm, I don't know. I'm more palatable. I can assimilate. I can be who you want me to be, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it wasn't until BLM and George Floyd where I was really awoken to the fact that, yeah, you know, I was hiding a big part of myself in that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, learning how to celebrate that through music was a fascinating thing, mm-hmm. and discovering Punjabi music, like Punjabi garage or Bhangra properly from a proper like ethnomusicological perspective as well. Like I wasn't brought up listening to any Punjabi music or Bollywood really, beyond like the bangers of the films, you know. So yeah, and with Bengali, my Bengali side and my culture, the theatre, the poetry, the art, is the writing is everything, you know, and it's really informed my sense of my values as well as an artist and what I'm trying to carry forward. Mm-hmm. So I owe a lot to, yeah, that sort of. I'm thinking about this now, but you know the Seva,
that
idea of just giving back. I think that is what roots daytime is, you know, mm-hmm. for all of us. And the idea of the collective is like the people behind the collective will change, but the ethos of what it stands for, I hope, will live long into like hopefully 10, 15, 20 years to come, you know. So it's not, this isn't just a fad, this isn't just a moment, and I'm really, really proud that we have those conversations and we're aware of that, you know.
Yeah, and I think the fact that it's called Daytime is based on the original daytimers of, I think it was the 80s, was it? Late 70s and 80s, when there would be South Asian people as an escape going to these sort of daytime gigs and bunking off school or doing whatever they needed to do to have their community. And the fact that you've brought that back around for the modern age. But it's, in a way, it's sad that there's still that sort of pressing need for that sort of expression, but it's also beautiful that we can still kind of circle back and feel connected to those previous generations and people that we didn't know but had the same lived experiences as us intergenerationally, and kind of celebrate amazing parts of our culture. Talking about how you're half Bengali, half Punjabi, you grew up in London. So how was it growing up in London and expressing your culture, and yeah, how did you celebrate your culture, religion, all of those aspects? How was it doing that in London? I'm asking because I grew up in Stoke-on-Trent and there aren't many Indian people there at all. So for me, like, my Tamil identity was very much something that I got to celebrate a lot at home. And seeing my grandparents when I'd go back to India, and it would be something that was very much a home environment based thing for me. And then going to school was something that I'd leave that behind and I'd go and do school. So it was, I'd code switch so much, and it was almost like there were two versions of me growing up.
You're an actor now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I'm interested to hear what how it was for you.
Yeah, it's all rooted in home, isn't it? It's rooted in safety. I think a lot of that was it's sort of like a safety mechanism, you know, for my grandparents and my parents who were here and navigating this country and with the National Front walking around. So yeah, home is just like a very, very safe place for us to be us. I'm really fortunate that my family and extended family all live in Northwest London, really. So like Sundays would be sat in front of Nani's TV watching Bollywood films. Mm-hmm. And that was like every week. Mm-hmm. So I'm really, really grateful that I had that time. Mm-hmm. And she's a very, very religious person. Mm-hmm. So I've learned a lot about Hinduism from her. Mm-hmm. And Vedantic philosophy. Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, informs a big part of my life. And I really, really love it and lean on it.
Did you feel like there was that aspect of kind of code switching where you'd have all of that rich culture and heritage in one aspect, but it's not something that you necessarily kind of expressed with friends at school or sort of in things that you did outside of that? Or was it just a constant?
It's quite interesting. I was reflecting with some of my one of my only brown friends at school. And this was during the time of Diary of a Bad Man, you know, Hamza Arshad. He's, I think, now has like an MBE or something.
He's done so much charity work and work for children. He's doing amazingly.
I was like, if you watch that stuff now, that man should be cancelled. Well, this is the caliber of people getting an MBE, do you know what I mean? I digress. I was talking to my mate and we were reflecting on how at this time, you know, Citizen Khan, Diary of a Bad Man, people were creasing at South Asian people. And that was a thing, Apu from The Simpsons. Like, there was a very popular culture away from the sort of Asian core of the 90s, post 9/11, when we were growing up, was very, South Asians became the butt of the jokes. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking of more, like, what was that show? It was a Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
That guy as well, whatever his name is. Mm-hmm. Shout out him, that early representation.
Yeah, I was thinking of the one in Diary of a Wimpy Kid. There's a Indian one in that. He's just like a nerd. He's the butt of everyone's jokes.
There we go. Yeah. Anyway, so it's fascinating the extent to which I felt that I had to play up to those stereotypes at school. And I'm looking back on it, I'm like, this is actually really deeply problematic and quite sad. But the positive to come out of that is that I have an absolutely incredible Indian accent as a result of it. And I made a lot of people laugh. And those early years I spent performing. And that classic trope of interviewing a comedian in a podcast and then being like, oh, so which how do you become a comedian? Pause. Which parent were you trying to make happy or like cheer up, you know? I think it was one of those experiences for me. I definitely hid my culture, but definitely lent into like these Western ideas or tropes to which like I had to or could celebrate myself growing up. If that, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. And based off that, I just wanted to ask, there's obviously a lot of culture and media that's very sort of stereotypical. Do you think that's improved now? And if so, do you have any, you know, good recommendations for the listeners of art or movies, TV shows that they should watch that you feel a bit more accurately represents real life experiences?
Yes, I think it has improved.
Yeah.
I don't think it's perfect. Mm. But even from auditions that I was getting back in the day to auditions I'm getting now, I'm like, cool, casting directors are really... really fighting the good fight or like conscious about bias or stereotyping, which is great. And I think there are a lot of amazing South Asian performers coming through now, you know. Look at Simone Ashley, for example, or Riz Ahmed. In terms of my recommendations for things, The Informer that Riz Ahmed did, I think is amazing. And it really takes that whole... That the trope of being misunderstood as a terrorist and reinterpreting it and telling a really honest, vulnerable and beautiful story. And his acting in it is absolutely phenomenal. What else have I seen that's good recently? There's a play on at the Bush Theatre called Statues, written by my friend Azan Ahmed, starring my other very good friend Johnny Khan. And we grew up together. I feel like there are a lot of people creating work that is celebrating themselves in really, really authentic ways. You know, we're not writing plays about our South Asianness anymore. We're writing plays about grief. We're writing plays about relationships. Waleed Akhtar's The P Word at the Bush Theatre as well. Those are things that come to mind. It's beautiful to see people celebrating themselves and their intersectionality as well within their South Asian experience. I feel like there's a whole movement and force, and a lot of people in my circles that I can see are like, yeah, I'm not going to audition for that. Like, why can't I audition for this character in a show? Like, you get sent scripts, you're like, let me be that. Let me be Ben. Let me be David. You know, which is really healthy, and it's pushing the culture a lot quicker.
Growing up, watching romantic movies and even like cartoons when I was younger, the attractive people or the people that were aspirational for the viewer were white people. And I think it's really refreshing to start to see movies and TV shows where the romantic lead is a South Asian person. I don't know if you watch Starstruck with Rose Matafeo. Love that show. And Nikesh Patel is an amazing romantic lead, and he's really attractive in it. But when I was growing up, I couldn't dream of like a South Asian man. He wasn't white passing or whatever people would say. Yeah. He looks very South Asian, and he is cast as and presented as the person that everyone fancies, which is so refreshing because it makes you... I was growing up thinking having fair skin, having blonde hair is realistically what people are looking at as the beauty ideal. I think it's things like that in media. I can definitely see it moving on. It's a slow pace for sure. But the idea that he didn't have to be very Indian in that show, you know, he doesn't come out like singing Punjabi MC. He's just a man. He's an actor and he's working. And he's also just Indian. Like, it's just part of the show. And it was so normalized and I rated it so much. But yeah, if you haven't watched it yet, highly recommend.
But his first gig was Indian Summers, right? Yeah. On Channel 4. Yeah. And I remember watching that and being like, that was a really good TV show back in the day. But again, it was very self-contained, you know, like all my family friends were watching that show. I don't really know how many other white people were watching it, to be honest. Yeah. But he was the romantic lead in that. But within that certain context. So it's moved, I guess that was the early days of sort of representation for the South Asian community. But now it's like, cool, this is for anyone. Yeah. Culture is for everyone anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I also had another question. You do so much stuff that's related to your cultural identity. I've got such a list of bullet points here. I wanted to talk to you about being the creative director of the Mehful event series. So tell us a bit about the concept behind it and how you think it's important in showcasing South Asian creativity.
Yeah, so Mehful is a sort of splinter collective, I guess, born from Daytimers. It started out as an event series where I curated and platformed spoken word poets and live musicians do these really informal evenings, which took inspiration from Mehful gatherings in the time of the Moguls, which were sort of gatherings in people's living rooms, which would fuse food, poetry, live like Qawwali or Hindustani classical sort of musical offerings. And I thought that ethos of creating spaces where it's very intergenerational, it's very accessible, it's very informal, and most importantly, sober as well. I thought there isn't scope within the sort of South Asian musical output or underground to have those spaces. So obviously fortunate enough to use the platform that we'd already established with Daytimers to launch something, but it's sort of, it's morphed into its own thing, you know. I wouldn't say it's specifically poetry related at all anymore. I think it's Daytimers' arts and culture offshoot, whereby we're really tapped into what's happening in theatre, and I really want to try and make some roads there this coming year. But also in terms of our visual art offering, we did an exhibition at Rich Mix recently with a creative cohort that we were sort of mentoring for, I think, 3 months as part of Rich Mix's Resonate scheme. So that's the second year of us doing that. So I'm really interested in building communities away from the dance floor as well, you know, and bringing in people that, you know, it's a privilege to be allowed out at night and dance. And I wasn't afforded that privilege at all until I went to university, to be honest. I feel like there needs to be a space for that, and visual art in particular, and spoken word, and those stories are so, so rich and so important. And those are the things away from the internet that's archiving all this musical movement that really lasts, you know, like getting, this is just like a bucket list dream, but getting like a Mayfield poetry anthology archived in the British Library, you know, what would that mean for someone who stumbles across that in 20, 30 years time? So yeah, that's the sort of other side of the mission that myself and the Mayfield team are really interested in pushing, that sort of culture as well.
I think documenting storytelling and the creative, like, your creative expression is so important, and it's one of the reasons that I wanted to start this podcast. It is a digital documentation, but my idea is that I will interview people who are making waves in the South Asian scene in London and show that it's not one type of person. The people that I've had on are so different, have had such different life experiences. I interviewed Tabitha Mary, and she's a content creator and model from Sri Lanka, and she was talking to me in such depth about how Sri Lankan identity feels for her, because she feels Tamil, not Sri Lankan, because she doesn't associate with the state. She associates with the culture, because the state's relationship with that culture is historically very, let's say, tense, but you know what I'm talking about. So I think understanding that aspect, and then your experiences throughout audio as a series, and then having that as chapters within a wider story of South Asian identity in London, is something that really inspired me to make the podcast, and something that I didn't think I'd seen before. And I think podcasting is such an intimate form of storytelling. I think it's just you and the person who's speaking to you, headphones in, and you can really create a zone. So I really relate, because I think sober experiences where you can create an environment that people feel safe, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a party. It can also just be a form of cultural expression where even just partaking in it is part of creating that content, because the person that will listen to this podcast is engaging with a wider South Asian cultural scene, which I think is really important.
I think the most important thing about the Mayfield series, which I've come to appreciate and never would have expected, is how intergenerational our audiences are. It's amazing. Well, I was part of the team that we launched our Daytimers Festival at the Horniman Museum and Gardens this summer in June, which was a massive success. And we just sort of met, we had a Mayfield stage there where we programmed talks, poetry. We had a talk from the legendary anti-racist worker, Amrit Wilson. And just by careful curation with intention, that stage was filled with people my parents' age and older, you know. We did an event at the Royal Albert Hall. There were loads of children. It's fascinating to me that families now feel safe enough to engage with the South Asian underground for the first time on their terms, you know. There's so many older people coming And they've been fascinated by what's happening with daytimers and collectives like Dialed In, but they don't have a way in yet. Mm-hmm. And going to a Dialed In festival seems like a very daunting thing, and you don't want to take up space as an older person. Those are conversations that I've had with some of my family members. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think our daytimers festival, we had 37% children, if you look at the analytics of people that came. And for me, that was, and that 37% was just children from the age of 0 to 3 years old, which is amazing because there were a lot older kids as well playing cricket. Like, so yes, yeah, stuff like that. I'm like, these are formative years where people can be around like-minded people that happened to be South Asian on their own terms. I didn't really have that growing up. It was very like, let's go meet ex auntie's family because we were family friends back in the day. Like, you'll like them. It's like, well, I've got literally nothing in common with them. Shout out them though. I love them all, obviously. But yeah, it's cool to find your own tribe again. You keep using that word.
Absolutely. And I want to talk to you about your inspirations and the impact that you hope to have with all of the work that you do so that they see dreamers like me can reflect on our own motivations and aspirations. So in terms of what you mentioned about your upbringing and your cultural identity and how it's formed, do you feel like you had to overcome any cultural stereotypes to pursue the work that you do? And what were your motivations and inspirations that kind of helped you overcome that?
Seeing movements that have come before, people winning, people pushing the culture, for some of the names that I've mentioned already, which I do find inspiring. And also that there's a level of privilege as well, you know, that I've been afforded being brought up in this country and, my parents working really, really hard for me. So I feel a sense of like, cool, I got to give back too. And I think that really informs everything that I've done to date, you know. I was afforded opportunities that people would only dream of. And I want to create those opportunities for other people. And that, yeah. In inspiration wise, I really don't know. I guess I've come to this with that deep sense of purpose, but also the fact that I just really, really love what I do, to be honest. And I think I find anything else really, really boring. I love being constantly kept on my toes, stimulated creatively, fulfilled. That's where the inspiration comes from, and meeting like-minded people, you know, and collaborating, like the conversation like this is a really special thing.
And based on all what we chatted about, community is clearly a really central theme to a lot of what you do. I wanted to ask, how do you balance supporting your community and also pursuing an individual artistic voice?
Yeah, it's a really tricky one.
Yeah.
We're really lucky with the work that we do with daytimers specifically, that I've the conversations that I've had with elders in the scene, that's a question that I ask people regularly. I think there's an extent to which people will pigeonhole you as the community person. You're always at the nights and you're always DJing, but you're probably going to work in, like, for the Arts Council one day, or you're probably going to work for Music Youth Charities, which is obviously incredible work, both of them. Less the Arts Council now with all their political rubbish. But yeah, I guess it's less of a conscious thing and more of a blind trust in the fact that I can do a lot of this community work within the South Asian underground, whatever you want to call it, and really celebrate my identity on those terms. But when it comes to my artistry, this is where I struggle to really relate the two away from my melanin, you know? As an artist, I really don't... I think I've made a conscious effort for the past maybe 2 years now, year, 2 years, to not be taken down the rabbit hole that the industry wants to put people associated with daytimers in being in that sort of South Asian bubble, and that is your sound and that is what you play and this is how we're going to package you and this is these are the lineups going to be on, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I play a lot of different I play music from around the world, and there are white people daily that get celebrated for doing that. Mm. So I want to be afforded that same privilege, which I people get now, you know. Mm. And I'm working with signed with a great agent and great team, and they really get that too. Mm-hmm. I guess it's about being very intentional with your career. And in my experience of obviously still very young in it and still figuring things out, right now I feel like I can do all the community work as well. But they are, it is sort of two different sides of my artistic interest. I feel like one is more as a creative producer and programmer and curator, and one is like as the face of something. Or, for want of better term, when you're on the film set, like talent, you know? Mm-hmm. As a performer, I guess. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a better way of putting it. Yeah, I hope that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. And I guess it is a difficult balance, even for, like I mentioned, people who are trying to work out how they want to pursue their creativity, working out how to balance that with the different things that you do and feel fulfilled from that balance. Because I guess it's easy to pursue something and enjoy it, but then pursuing something and making sure that all the different aspects of what you do are kind of juggled together in a way that you feel happy with, and that you're doing what you want to do as much as possible, and that the admin around it seems worth it, is a difficult balance to find. And I think it is hard, especially the concept of being part of a community, but also being your own person. I think it is hard. And I think that's why collectives like Daytimers and lots of different kind of South Asian events and things, you find like-minded people that will help you attune your individual artistic identity, but also you can relate to them in a sense that you feel a sense of community. So I hope that they kind of interact with each other in a way that it kind of pushes each other on in a positive way.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like my Daytimers people are my family, you know. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily my musical family, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. I think that's fine to say, you know. Like my musical family exists in my identity as a Londoner, you know, and the melting pot of sounds that comes as a result of growing up in this city, especially in Northwest London, where, you know, the birth Broken Beat and the house was a massive import there. I really identify with the sort of UK jazz scene and Southeast London as this sort of beacon of talent and musical expression that's coming out of there right now. I feel really akin in like to those movements and scenes, and a lot of my work. I'm involved with a lot of projects that are spearheaded in Southeast as well, which I'm really proud of. So I guess there's like two sides of my interest. There's two sides of it's not code switching though, what we were talking about before, but everything is allowed to coexist. I think people get scared of that. Mm-hmm. I guess a massive fear of mine that I regularly think is like, will people get what I do? Because I just do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And there might not seem like there's a through line sometimes, which I do get. But yeah, I just have, what I said before, I've got a blind faith that it will work out, you know. Like, I'm just going to do things that I'm passionate about. Mm-hmm. And yeah, run with it.
And also the through line is yourself. You are the connection between all of those things. And I feel like there will always be some way that something that you're doing, something that you did in the past, feeds straight back into it. And you would have never have thought that random internship or something that you did would sort of lead to that. So I think it's really powerful, and I think it's really exciting as well. So moving on to my final question. Do you think of yourself as a dreamer? Often we get told not to daydream, not to get distracted, but to concentrate. But is there sometimes a necessity to dream or fantasize about a reality to eventually break those boundaries and be a trailblazer?
Trailblazer.
That's you. You're the trailblazer.
Really? Wow. I think I'm a dreamer.
Yeah.
I definitely identify as a dreamer. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember my dreams when I go to sleep, though. Mm. Don't know what that says about me. Haven't Googled it yet. But yeah, I think about the future a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really what drives me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What is out there in the world to achieve and what can be achieved is a real, really drives me. Really drives me. I think it's good to have dreams and good to have aspirations, and but whilst keeping yourself grounded as well, you know, which I think a lot of the work that I do with DJing and being on stage as well, like you're forced to be present and you're forced to live in that moment of wherever you're in. So yeah, I think I'm a dreamer, but I've got good coping mechanisms basically.
Yes. And what do you envision for yourself in your career? What sort of things are you aspiring to? Is this an existential question?
No, who knows? I'm honestly just going to do me and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to take my acting somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a really fantastic agent who I'm working with. And we've got stuff brewing. So we'll see what's going
to
happen.
Do you want to stick more to theatre or do you want to go into sort of TV?
I want to do it all.
Okay. It's early days, like you said. We're at the very beginnings of a lot of things. So it's very exciting to see it in the early stages because when we look back on it, we'll think, whoa. Are there any other inspirational Desi Dreamers you want to give a shout out to? Any of your role models? Anyone I could interview?
I take loads of inspiration for the people in the Asian Underground that came before. One of my heroes, I've been lucky enough to interview two of my heroes in DJ Rithu and Asha Putli.
Okay.
Good luck getting Asha on an interview.
Right.
It was difficult.
Right.
But yeah, honestly, so, so inspiring.
Mm.
And I feel like they're both people that we're doing everything that I'm trying to do now, but in a much, much more difficult context.
Mm-hmm.
I'm flying that flag unashamedly and unapologetically as well.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely look them up.
Mm-hmm.
I think Rithu would be a fascinating conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Always is. In terms of people our age now, I think it's worth talking to. I think there's so many. I think if I look at this whole like scene or like bubble that we're in now, I think there are so many people that I could label as like future cultural leaders, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think people just really, really driven and really, really hungry. In theatre, I think it'd be really interesting to talk to someone in theatre right now. Thinking the director Millie Bhatia, doing amazing work. The writer Waleed Akhtar as well, and the actor and founder of Deen and Dunya, Azan Ahmed.
Mm-hmm.
Those three people in my mind, I'm like, you're really pushing the culture forwards by just existing within that industry, you know, doing nothing like overtly South Asian or just making really, really good work. And that's shifting the culture itself. I think I really want to talk to two of them. So
okay.
Azan, I don't, because I talk to him too much. But yeah, it'd be good conversation.
Okay, sounds good. And do you want to plug any social media before we finish? How can we follow you?
Yeah, I'm at Rohan_racket. RAKHIT, not tennis racket. What else? At daytimers_UK.
Mm-hmm.
Always follow us up on there. Big things planned for 2025, I'm not gonna lie, and I can't talk about any of it.
Thank you so much for listening to Desi Dreamers. I hope this story was a powerful reminder of the incredible resilience, creativity and determination that defines the South Asian diaspora. We've taken a journey which has explored the cultural influences, personal challenges, and transformative moments that have shaped a unique narrative. Each episode of Desi Dreamers is a testament to the fact that our stories matter. That representation isn't just about seeing ourselves reflected, but about understanding the complex, beautiful journeys that bring us to our most authentic selves. Importantly, our cultural heritage is not a limitation, but our greatest source of strength. Desi Dreamers is powered by Transmission Roundhouse and is available on all major podcast platforms. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you love today's story, please leave a review and share it with anyone who needs to hear about these incredible journeys. Next time, I'll be diving into another incredible story that proves our dreams have no boundaries. Until then, keep dreaming, keep believing, and most importantly, keep being unapologetically you. I'm Nikita Nachifan, and this has been Desi Dreamers.